Chapter 6, Encounters, Elohim, Edom, and Egypt. Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have struggled with God and with men, and have prevailed. Genesis 32, verse 28. Jacob had not seen his estranged brother Esau for many years when he returned from Mesopotamia to the land of his birth. Naturally, he was afraid of meeting the man whom he had cheated out of his birthright and related blessing. Yet, though he feared, his life was going to be protected. An early signal of this was his vision of angels as he drew closer to home. Jacob named the place where this happened Mahanaim, two hosts, a reference to the hosts or camps of God and Jacob present there. Genesis 32 and verses 1 and 2. Angels had similarly appeared to Jacob in a dream as he was leaving the land for his family's ancestral home in Paddan Aram, chapter 28 and verse 12. There God had said, "Behold, I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you." Verse 15, English Standard Version. Sending emissaries to Esau in the nearby land of Seir, or Edom, south of Ammon and Moab, Jacob sought to placate his brother, chapter 32, verses 3 through 5. The servants returned to tell Jacob that Esau was coming out to meet him with 400 men. The prospect filled Jacob with alarm. His first response was self-protective. He split his camp into two, thinking that an attack could do harm to only one, allowing the other to escape. His second response was to pray for protection to the God of his fathers in a humbler frame of mind than we have seen so far. Jacob said, "I am not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which you have shown your servant." Verse 10. He claimed God's help, reminding him of his earlier promise. Genesis 28, verses 13 through 15, "I will surely treat you well and make your descendants as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude." Chapter 32, verse 12, see also chapter 22, verse 17. Jacob had left his original family home with nothing but staff in hand, had been protected for more than 20 years, and returned with a large family and material possessions. Jacob's strategy was to send Esau several gifts of livestock before meeting him. Ahead of his entourage, he had his men drive five separate herds of animals, more than 500 in all. This, he hoped, would gradually soften his brother's heart toward him. That evening, Jacob and his family stayed encamped in Gilead. But during the night, he sent his two wives, the two female servants, and his 11 sons across the river Jabbok, in what is today Jordan, en route to the encounter with Esau. Then he stayed alone on the opposite bank. That night he wrestled with what is described first as a mysterious angelic visitor, verses 24 through 28, and Hosea chapter 12, verse 4. This was in reality Yahweh Elohim, the one who later became Jesus Christ. Though Jacob's hip was dislocated in the struggle, he refused to cease from holding on until the visitor had blessed him. Tenacity in pursuing God's way would be an essential to Jacob's further spiritual development, and this encounter demonstrated his willingness not to be defeated, yet to trust in his opponent. The blessing came in the form of a name change. Yahweh asked Jacob his name to get him to admit his nature as a heel grasper or deceiver. His renaming as Israel, prince or overcomer with God, emphasized his dependence on God rather than self. After this extraordinary experience, Jacob concluded, "I have seen God face to face, and my life is preserved." Genesis 32, verse 30. The Hebrew word pen, face, appears several times in this section. Not only did Jacob come face to face with God, but he also had to appease, make atonement with, his offended brother, come face to face with him, and be accepted or have his face lifted up. Verse 20. When the two brothers came within a short distance of each other, Jacob bowed to the ground 7 times as he approached. He called Esau my lord and referred to him as Esau's servant. Esau, far from being angry, ran to greet his brother. Again, the important concept of face appears in the story. Jacob said to Esau, I've seen your face as though I had seen the face of God, and you were pleased with me. Chapter 33, verse 10. God is merciful and forgiving, and Esau demonstrated the same characteristics. Jacob then insisted that Esau take the droves of animals, not as gifts, but as his blessing. That day the brothers were reconciled. Jacob implying that he would go to Seir and visit Esau after he and his household were rested and settled. Verses 11 through 17. Essentially, Jacob returned to Esau the blessing Isaac had mistakenly given him, a blessing of wealth and power. May God give you the dew of heaven, of the fatness of the earth, and plenty of grain and wine. Let people serve you and nations bow down to you. Be master over your brethren, and let your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be those who bless you. Chapter 27, verses 28 and 29. This was distinct from the blessing that Isaac gave to Jacob as he left for Mesopotamia. In that instance, he had repeated the blessing of progeny and specific land given to Abraham. Chapter 28, verses 3 and 4. This reversal on Jacob's part signaled his gradual coming to terms with what was more important in life, seeking the face of God and his blessing, rather than the physical wealth and power that had rightly been Esau's. Jacob was on his way to fulfilling his destiny as Israel, rather than trying to become Esau, the firstborn. That said, there would be many more challenges to Jacob's commitment to his new identity in the years ahead. This is borne out in the continuing use of both his names. Genesis records next that Jacob bought land from Hamor, who owned property around the city of Shechem. Chapter 33, verses 18 and 19. Signaling his new identity, he built an altar there to El Eloi, Israel, God, the God of Israel. But trouble lay ahead. Hamor was a Hivite, one of the tribes of Canaan. Soon after Jacob's arrival, his daughter Dinah formed a relationship with the daughters or women of the land. Chapter 34, verse 1. This led to her rape by Hamor's son Shechem. Jacob appeared unconcerned, perhaps because she was his daughter by the less loved Leah, and did nothing until his sons, who were taking care of the livestock, rushed home at the news. By contrast, Dinah's brothers were outraged. Knowing that their sister was being held in Shechem's house, verse 26, they first pretended to agree to a peace agreement and the blending of families with the Hivites. A central condition was male circumcision for the Hivites. Shechem had professed love for Dinah and agreed to immediate circumcision, being more honorable than all the household of his father, verse 19. Even so, her full brothers, Simeon and Levi, attacked and killed them all, plundering, raping the city, and taking the women and children captive. Their actions troubled Jacob greatly, and he became fearful of reprisal by the indigenous people. As for Simeon and Levi, they showed no regret, verses 30 and 31, and by their words condemned Shechem and perhaps even Jacob. Should he treat our sister, not your daughter, like a prostitute? When he had fled from Esau, Jacob had left the land via Bethel. There, in a dream, he had seen a vision of angels going up and down a ladder that reached heaven, and had been assured that the birthright of descendants and a specific land was his, not Esau's. Now God, Elohim, told him to return there and set up an altar to him. Jacob obeyed with gratitude for the protection and prosperity he'd received over the years and took the opportunity to purge his household, including the captives from Shechem, of any idols and related jewelry. So they gave to Jacob all the foreign gods that they had and the rings that were in their ears. Chapter 35, verse 4, English Standard Version. They also ritually cleansed themselves as part of their purification. Jacob named the place of the altar El Bethel, the God of the house of God, because there God, Elohim, appeared to him when he had fled from the face of his brother, verse 7. In the Hebrew language version of this passage, there is a reminder of the plurality of God, not just in the term Elohim, but also in the third-person plural ending of the verb niglu, appeared or revealed. It should then be read literally, because there Elohim revealed themselves to him. In a second appearance to Jacob after his return from Paddan Aram, Elohim reconfirmed Jacob's new name, Israel, and the promises of land and progeny made to Abraham and Isaac, verses 9 through 15. In this meeting, God referred to himself as El Shaddai, God Almighty, as he had to Abraham, chapter 17, verse 1. But whereas he told Abraham that he would be a father of many, a Hamon, multitude of nations, Jacob, Israel, was to become a nation and a Kahal, a community or congregation of nations. This appearance took place once again at Bethel, where Jacob had set up a pillar stone in thanks and remembrance. See Genesis 28, verses 18 and 19. Despite this doubtless welcome reinforcement of God's favor, tragedy struck Jacob once more as he traveled on to the south. His wife, Rachel, died following the birth of her second son, Ben-Oni, son of my sorrow, later named Benjamin, son of the right hand, by Jacob. Rachel was buried close to Bethlehem, Jacob setting up another pillar stone to mark her grave. Chapter 35, verses 18 through 20. Jacob's grief over Rachel was not the only sorrow of that time. Soon after the family settled in the land, he learned that his eldest son, Reuben, had had sex with Jacob's concubine, Bilhah, mother of his half-brothers, Dan and Naphtali, verse 22. This resulted in Reuben's loss of firstborn status, chapter 49, verse 4, and 1 Chronicles 5, verse 1. What Reuben had done was a breach of the laws of incest, and possibly an attempt to elevate himself above Jacob. The stresses and strains between Jacob, his wives, and his family members were becoming more and more evident. The account of Jacob's life ends at this point with the recording of his death at Hebron. Now Jacob and Esau came together again to bury their 180-year-old father at the cave of Machpelah, where Abraham and Sarah had been laid to rest, Genesis 49, verses 29 through 32. Because Isaac lived 12 more years after Jacob returned, this section is chronologically out of sequence. The style of Genesis is to end one generational account before beginning another. The next section, or Toledot, is devoted to the descendants of Esau, also known by the national name Edom, who were born to his wives in Canaan and Seir. It also details the key peoples and individuals who inhabited Seir, land of the indigenous Horites, before Esau arrived, and to whom his family became related, chapter 36, verses 1 through 43. In these lists, one name that stands out is Amalek, whose descendants played a role in the continuing history of the children of Israel. Amalek was Esau's grandson through his son Eliphaz and the Horite concubine Timnah, verse 12. The Amalekites eventually lived in the Sinai and the Negev and were the first people to attack the children of Israel on their way to the Promised Land, Exodus 17, verses 8 through 16. Though defeated on that occasion, they became a thorn in Israel's side for centuries, particularly after the Israelites had entered the land, Judges chapter 6 and verse 3, and again in the days of Saul and David, 1 Samuel 15 verses 1 through 9, chapter 27 verse 8. During the reign of Hezekiah, king of Judah, some from the tribe of Simeon defeated their remnant in Seir, 1 Chronicles 4. Verses 42 and 43. As for Jacob, what happened to him in terms of the continuing story of the descendants of Abraham, was ultimately tied directly to his son Joseph, though the stories of Reuben and Judah are also important as they interact with Jacob and Joseph. Jacob's Toledot begins in Genesis 37 and continues through the end of chapter 50. Joseph, the firstborn of Jacob and Rachel, was the one through whom the children of Israel came to live in Egypt until their eventual exodus under Moses. The story of Joseph begins in detail when he was 17 years old and looking after his father's sheep, chapter 37, verse 2. Joseph was his father's favorite son, born in Jacob's later years when he was about 90. The brothers he seems to have associated with most were the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, the handmaids of Jacob's wives. Though they were all older than Joseph, he was not afraid to report on their bad behavior to his father, verse 2. The tension caused by this only added to the feeling of dislike the various brothers had for Joseph because he was his father's favorite. Jacob showed his preference quite openly by making his son a special coat, Hebrew ketonet pasim, that signified rulership, verse 3. The Hebrew does not mean a coat of many colors, as it's often translated, but a long coat with long sleeves worn by royalty. All of this made life difficult for Joseph. When his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peaceably to him, verse 4. Their hatred was compounded by Joseph relating a dream in which his brothers bowed down to him. Then he added a second dream about being in the superior role. To this his father responded, "What is this dream that you have dreamed? Shall your mother and I and your brothers indeed come to bow down to the earth before you?" Verse 10. Nevertheless, Jacob, unlike the envious brothers, thought about what this dream might mean. Sometime later, Jacob sent Joseph to look for his brothers, who were feeding the flock away from home. Verses 12 through 17. When Joseph found them, it set in motion a train of events that would bring both anguish and blessing to the family over many years. Joseph's brothers took the opportunity to rid themselves of him and his troublesome dreams. At first, they planned to kill him and tell their father that a wild animal had taken him. It was only Reuben's intervention that prevented the murder. Instead, Joseph was thrown into a pit, perhaps a dry water cistern. As firstborn, Reuben no doubt felt responsibility to protect Joseph and planned to rescue him later and return him to Jacob, verses 21 and 22. Reuben must have gone away for a while because when he returned, Joseph had disappeared. A caravan train en route to Egypt had passed by, and at Judah's suggestion, the remaining brothers had sold the 17-year-old to the Ishmaelite traders, verses 25 through 28, for the going price of 20 shekels. See Leviticus 27 and verse 5. The irony here is that these descendants of Abraham's unelected son, Ishmael, had traded with some of Abraham's grandsons for the patriarch's elect grandson, taking him from Canaan, the land of promise, to sell him in Egypt, birthplace of Ishmael's mother. But once again in the Genesis story, we will see evidence of God's faithfulness to the promises made to Abraham. When the brothers returned to deceive Jacob about his son, though his supposed death was not now necessary, they callously continued with the lie and brought his coat stained with goat's blood as evidence. This is a double irony when we consider that Jacob had deceived his father by wearing goatskin coverings and his brother's garment. The brothers added to their deceit by attempting to console their father. But he refused to be comforted and said, "I shall go down into the grave to my son in mourning." Verse 35. In their hardness of heart, they allowed him to suffer for many years. As for Joseph, he had been sold into the household of a high-ranking Egyptian officer named Potiphar, verse 36, where he would be first esteemed and then betrayed on the way to recognition and great power under Pharaoh himself.